Okay, we're continuing in our discussion of Moshe and Aharon. Recall that Moshe takes every opportunity to make sure that Aharon is part of his gedulah, whatever he's enacting the plagues, right? To go from pre-plague to first plague, I think, is the biggest turn, right? The most dramatic. Of all of the nuances. Because to go from plague 7 to plague 8, okay, we've been here before, right? But that first plague, to give it to Aharon to do, alright? Even if you want to say it's because Moshe couldn't hit the water that once saved him, but to give it to Aharon is just it's such a takana for Sefer Bereishis. You know what I'm saying? That where the brothers are constantly jealous of each other, and the younger and the brother and the older are at odds, and the younger, you know, takes. I don't see that he has any such sensitivity over his gedulah over the older ones. Otherwise, Yosef would have tamped it down a little bit, right? So. Moshe and Aharon, their dealings here in Parashat Va'era with the first plague, the dealings with in Parashat Shmini with the question of eating the meat, right? We talked about that, whether Aharon is right or not in not eating the meat. Did we touch upon that? Okay, let's mention it. So. It's an equally important and dramatic moment in Moshe's life, and really in the history of Bnei Yisrael, is where they are completing the Mishkan. This is really part two of the Egel. Moshe comes down from Har Sinai and is aghast. Aharon, what did they do that made you do this? What did they do to you? Right? So Moshe is Mustami should come down a little harder on Aharon. I left you in charge. He said, well, you know, Moshe, you left me and Hur in charge. Do you see Hur? No, where is he? They killed him. Right? Hur was the nephew. Right? Hur was Miriam's son. So they killed him. So, and they would have killed me too, Moshe. I know you would have said over my dead body, but I'm not you. You're Emes. I'm Shalom. Right? You went in that second story to tell the guy, I would have done things differently. I would have gone to each one and said, you know what he thinks about you? You know, you really shouldn't be fighting. He really likes you. And he would have gone to the other guy and he would have made up. Maybe we could make up. Right? So, all right, they're two brothers, they're different. But I'm just trying to say that Moshe looks as much as possible to give the gedulah to Aharon. Right? And when Aaron's two sons die, Moshe has to be very careful, straddling between his love of his brother and his compassion for his brother, together with the first-hand knowledge. Remember what happens if when God comes and things aren't exactly, you know, remember when God came to me, I almost was killed when with that bris story, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Right? So Aharon, I know things that you don't know that I just want to save your life and the life of the lives of your two surviving sons. So be very careful with what's going on here. Right? So Moshe is listening to Aaron's explanation he's trying to explain why he didn't eat the meat. Right? Eating the meat is part of the kapara. There's a chatos, there are a few chatos being grown that day. Let's just say it's the chatos of Rosh Chodesh Nisan. There's the chatos of Nachshon. There's the chatos of the completion of the Mishkan. There's a lot of chatos is going on, and we already learned earlier in Vayikra that a chatos, a sin offering, does not atone for the sin unless the kohen eats the meat. That's part of the kapara. And Aharon didn't eat the meat. We have to learn halacha from here that an onain before the funeral takes place is not allowed to eat meat. Right? It's one of the few restrictions. No meat, no wine. Right? Okay, so Aharon excuses himself before Moshe. And keep this in mind. Aaron's two sons have just died because of a minor infraction. Moshe is worried that little infractions when it comes to this Mishkan situation gets people killed on her. All right? I haven't gone back to God to ask if your refusal to eat the meat and its concomitant effect on Bnei Israel, without not getting there the necessary kapara, what that means to you even. Does this mean you know your other two sons are going to die? I haven't looked into that yet. Right? So Aaron gives his explanation, and just a slight digression. Earlier, there's a medrash in this week's parasha, Truma, the Tanchuma Truma, that says that Bnei Yisrael insisted to God, we want korbanos. We want sacrifices. And God says, I'd rather not have it. But they say, but we can't, we have to have sacrifices. In Egypt, the Egyptians at that time weren't sacrificing animals, but they were aware that ancient cultures had animal sacrifice as part of their service to the deity. And we don't want to serve you with any less of a commitment than those other nations. We want sacrifice. And God pushes back and he says, but they think they're feeding their gods with the sacrifice and they're giving drink with the libations, right? I don't eat and I don't drink. The sacrifices are mine anyway. The animals are mine. You can't give me back something that's mine already. I don't really want it. And Bnei Israel insists. And Hashem said, really? Are you sure that you insist on this? Because I have to be careful. The temples and the sanctuaries of the Gentiles, of the nations of the world, are repositories of Znus and Avodah Zarah and Gilui Raos and Shri Kustamim. They do terrible things in their temples. Right? Terribly immoral things by my standards. I don't like child sacrifice. I don't like what they do where every man in the town sleeps with the priestesses. You don't even know how diseases are spread that way. Right? I don't want that behavior. Right? You hear it? That thing about diseases, I just made up. But I don't want that in my sanctuary. And I do not want you just have free reign in my sanctuary to do whatever you think I want. If you're going to have a sanctuary, now get this is the point. The Medrash says, if you want a sanctuary, you want a place to bring korbanos, then I insist that it has to be exactly according to my detail. Do not violate it in any way. You have only a certain amount of time to eat the korbanos. It has to be brought only in a certain way, in a certain place. Right? Any small infraction. I mean, at least the way the Gemara explains. It says, don't come in here without washing your hands and feet and die. Wow. You're not wearing all the garments? Chayav Misa. Too many garments? Chayav Misa. You think your last haircut was more than a month ago? Chayav Misa. Right? They're like 8, 9 chayav. In fact, if you look at Acharemos in Medrash Rabbah, gives 12 reasons why Nadav and Abihu died. 12 reasons, really. Sounds like Yom Kippur Drosha or something. Right? So all the things that which you could possibly mess up. You want all that? Really? You still want it? Because if it's anything goes, I don't want that. The next step is you're going to be sacrificing babies to me. And that's not, I don't want that. Okay? So Bnei Israel insists, okay, you'll get korbanos. But just remember, precise behavior, right? You see prophets like Amos, Micha complain that our sacrificial order is so much more boring than what the other nations do. They put on a show, not just for your eyes, but your participation. Right? All right, they kill a baby at the end, but still, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Right? So all this was a digression, just to show. Back to Moshe. Aaron, your kids can die if you don't eat the meat. I mean, look what just happened because your two boys just brought out a ketores that wasn't part of the system, right? Aaron, I'm worried. What's going to happen here if you disobey God on a day like this? Look what just happened to your two boys for disobedience. What is Aaron? Aaron pushes back and he says, he doesn't say, Moshe, you're right, I'll eat the meat. right? So look at the response. Vayikra Perek Yud. It's the Aaron's response is Pasuk Yutes, very end of the Perek Yud. Yud Yutes.
Vayidaber Aaron al Moshe, Hin Hayom Hakrivu es Chagosam, Yehzo Osam, Bnei Hashem, Vatikrena Osi Ka'ila, Vachalti Fatas Hayom, Hayitav Bnei Hashem.
That's a question. Hayitav Bnei Hashem? Although Hayitav doesn't have the characteristic Hayitav Patach, but all everyone understands it as a question. Hayitav Bnei Hashem? Wouldn't it be good in God's eyes that a Kohen should atone by eating meat right after he loses what I just lost? Not one, but two boys? Right? Now, there are some differences between Kohen Gadol and Stam Kohen when it comes to mourning. Right? The Kohen Gadol has to mourn differently than the regular Kohanim. And it seems that his two boys, the surviving boys, have some kind of dinim of Kohen Gadol. It's interesting. My raya is in the beginning of Bamidbar, when in Perek Gimel it describes Aaron's children, it says that they were all mishuchim. Now mishuchim means that to get started as Kohanim, right? If you're born from a mishuch, right, then you're automatically a Kohen. But if you want to be a Kohen now, to start with, in the middle of the things, right? Because you weren't a Kohen when you were born. Because when you were born, the Bechorim was supposed to be my Kohan. In fact, the word Kohen appears in Parshas Yisro. Right? It says the Kohanim were bringing olos. Well, Kohanim. Before the Eidah, the Kohanim were Bechorim. So the Tzach repeats, the firstborn. Right? Rashi writes, Kohanim would be the firstborn. Right? The ministers. Okay? But, so if we're going to be Kohanim in the middle of the game, you have to have oil poured on. Right? But you know, Meshuch, right? Meshuchim means that you're a Mashiach. Only the Kohen Gadol is the Mashiach. Mashiach means the anointed one, the chosen one. So I would just try to explain that after Nadav and Abihu died, they brought in their cousins, remember? Elitzaphan? Remember, they brought in two their cousins who were considered Levim to drag out the bodies. Wait, why couldn't Elazar and Itamar drag out the bodies? Aharon, no. Explain why not, because although these laws haven't been even written yet, it's an emor. Why can't Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, drag out the bodies? Because the Kohen Gadol is not even allowed to mitame for close relatives, right? But Stam Kohanim can. Why didn't Elazar and Itamar drag out the bodies? The answer is that might have been too difficult for them to drag out their brother's bodies. Let the cousins do it. Right? But no, the cousins did it because of halachic reasons. These boys had a din of mishuchim. They were like Kohen Gadol because they had oil pouring on their heads. That's just technicality. So here we are. Aaron is making his argument. I understand two things. I understand that my actions may have denied the proper kapara for Bnei Israel, right? And I also understand that I have disobeyed the protocol. On a day where disobedience of protocol just cost my two boys their lives. What should Moshe say?
Follow the procedure.
Look at the next pasuk.
Is it okay?
Vayishma Moshe vayitav be'enav. That's the pasuk I'm working with. That's the cards I've been dealt. Now, what do Chazal say, Moshe? You backed off. You backed down. You wimped out. Who knows how different things could have been if you only stood up your guns and say, Aaron, I don't care what your personal loss is. You've got to do this. And yet, look, there's no pasuk before this story that says, if you're an onan, you can't eat meat. This is where we learn it from. Moshe doesn't push back. He says, yeah, because Moshe knew the halacha. The halacha is what's coming out of here. Moshe doesn't push back. Mistama, you know, Moshe is a, he has a, you know, is God, is this something I should push back on? Yeah. No, no, your brother's right. Look, Aaron is also being very, very principled. I know what disobedience does to someone in this setting, right? It's really a beautiful thing. To me, it's like the same as Moshe giving up the first plague to Aaron. It's such a moment. It's the best moment in Bereish, in Shmos, in the whole Exodus story, is Makas Dom. Because before that, we're just throwing down sticks that the Egyptians can match, right? Okay. So, and he gives it to Aaron. And now he's telling, you know, Aaron, you're right. Vayishma Moshe v'yitav v'einav. I've been talking so much all throughout this story. It's nice to listen once in a while. You're right. And this is an important moment because we're just rolling out this Mishkan, right? And, you know, Moshe's giving up a lot of his own gedula to his brother, right? To begin with, to be Kohen Gadol. And Moshe's reputation is at stake here. Can I admit that I saw things wrong? Can I admit that I jumped the gun by being angry with him? He wasn't angry with Aaron, he was angry with his two sons for not eating the meat, but Aaron got the message. Yes, you know what? It's not about me. It's not about Aaron either, actually. It's about truth. It's about... And plus, my brother just lost this terrible loss. Look, it's my nephews. You know, I'm not pleased either. But you know, this is one of the problems. And maybe we can take a segue here into another story involving the two of them, which is the May Meriva. Right? You know what I'm talking about? May Meriva, the Parsha Slukas. Right? In the May Meriva, one has to always look, and this is now on page. Sure, what page it is in your chaverot, but it's Shmuel David Lutzato. It's towards the about the first third or the first almost halfway through your chaverot. It looks like the, you know, you have a cover page of Shmuel David Lutzato. It looks like this. Shadal.
It's in Hebrew.
Hebrew. So, it's right before the Nechama Leibowitz stuff. Whenever we discuss what's going on between Moshe and Aharon at Main Meriva, where they hit the rock instead of talking to him, it should really be understood in the backdrop. And we're going to have to really work on why doesn't God take stock of this. Right? And the backdrop of the fact that whatever they did at that rock, they were angry, they spoke ill of Bnei Israel, they hit instead of speaking, whatever it is, really should be understood in the backdrop of the fact that these two brothers just lost their sister. Right? Their sister just died. Half hour ago, an hour ago, I don't know, just now. Right? Maybe a day ago or something, I don't know. But you know, they've been working together for a long, long time. Right? They just took you through a very long journey. Right? It's also crucial to point out, what's interesting is that the parsha where this appears, Chukas, right, starts off with the Paraduma, right? which Chazal insist was actually revealed to Bnei Yisrael on the same day that Nadav and Abihu died. Before Nadav and Abihu. You hear a Gemara that says certain things happened on Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Because if Paraduma was not already known to them, how did we know? Why did they have to tell their cousins to bring them out? You know what I'm saying? In other words, Tum and Tara was already known to them. Paraduma was already given to them. All right? Yeah? So Parshas Chukas is actually the same day that Noach and Abihu died. One is Vayikra, one is Magid. So it's the Parsha starts off with Paraduma, very early in their stay in the desert. But then, the Mamish, the Pasuk after, it's Perikut Tes, is the whole Paraduma. The next Pasuk in the Tanakh, in the Torah, Vatamas Moshe, Vatikuber Sham. Right? It says they came to his place, and Miriam dies, and there's no water. Which made, of course, Chazal say that the water came in her zechut, and when she died, no longer had that zechut, and now the water is gone, and they're thirsty. Now, wait a second. Miriam dies right before Moshe and Aaron. Right? Miriam, then Aaron, then Moshe. That means that that's in the 40th year in the desert, right? Get the point? Parshas Chukas, between chapter 19 and chapter 20, has 38 some odd missing years. Now we go from the second year in the desert to the 40th year in the desert. And Bnei Yisrael are thirsty. It's not the first time they're thirsty. What happened the first time when they left Egypt and they're thirsty? What does Hashem tell Moshe to do? Just take a staff and hit the rock and get water for the people. Right? Okay. So that's the backdrop. We're going to have to address that. Let's just open up for just a little bit. Bamidbar Perkhof. No, this is Shaddal. This is I just want you to look at it. This is what Shaddal is doing. This is such a famous passage in Shaddal, page 472 to 476. It's probably the thing he's most famous for in his Perush Al HaTorah, which is, what did Moshe and Aharon do wrong in Parshas Chukas? We're going to read through the whole thing, right? What did Moshe and Aharon do wrong? There's nothing like it. No other Perush has such a comprehensive discussion over the various opinions of what they did wrong. In the end, after much scholarship, because he's well aware of what anyone has ever written about this, Christian, Jew, anybody, right? And he writes it down. And he ends up with such a simplistic explanation of what they did wrong. But with a twist that really, I think, is very, very, very revealing. Okay. But let's just read the few psukim. So it says, ויבואו בני ישראל כל העדה מתברצין בחודש הראשון, וישב העם בקודש, ותומס שם מרים ותיקובר שם. Okay, according to tradition, she died on the 10th of Nisan. ולא היה מים לעדה. Now the Vav is the Vav Hasiba. Because she died, they had no water. They קלו על משה ועל אהרון. So they all gathered upon Moshe and Aaron. ויורב העם עם משה. So first they made a kehila, you know, they gathered around Moshe and Aaron, but then their complaint was with Moshe. You know, Aaron, we understand, just comes along, but okay, they went to Moshe and they said, if only we could have died like all the other Jews, fortunate enough to die, the Israelites fortunate enough to die in those earlier years in the desert, right? Why is this especially debilitating? Because we got used to in Sefer Bamidbar already for the complaints of Bnei Yisrael, with the Slav, with the Tavira, with all these other stories. But this is the end of the 40 years. You'd think they'd become what's called Dor Dea. You ever hear of that? You'd think that they would become, by now, a little more, I don't know, a little more accustomed to the rigors of the desert. Right, God has never left you. It's been 40 years. Hey, you've made it this far. You think he's going to take you 40 years so that now you're going to just die of thirst at the end? The 40 years are up. You know that you're going in soon.
Do they know that?
Maybe a lot of them know that they die.
Because in Parshas Shlach, he said for every day that these scouts scouted, you're going to spend a year in the desert. It's been 40 years. Okay, but I'm sure they told each other. I'm sure they're aware of what's going on. Right? And they go on. Why have you taken out to Egypt to go to...
Take out of Egypt? That's a long time ago. Right? Okay. So the first sin that Shaddai says they committed is Pasuk Vav. Can you find it? He said, you haven't taken us to a place of figs and dates and raisins and pomegranates. This is a dry place and we're dying here. There's nothing to drink. So what do? Read Pasuk Vav. And then, Eva. Perek Chaf. Pasuk Vav. This kind of formulation happens often between Moshe and Aaron. Vayavo, singular verb, right? Mm-hmm. Moshe v'Aaron, plural subject. No. What are you? Bamidbar. Are you in Shema? Are you in Vayikra?
Yeah, no, I was in the Perek. Vayavo Moshe, v'Aaron b'nei ha'kav.
Aleihem. All right. How? What's wrong here? What are they doing wrong? The people are complaining about not having water and Moshe and Aaron going to the Ohel Moed for instruction. What's wrong with that?
He didn't really understand the problems of the people.
I mean, come on, Moshe. It's been 40 years. It's not the first time something like this has happened. This is the end of the 40 years. Maybe, talk to them. Confront them and say, guys, Moshe, God will never let you die here in the desert. It's another test. I don't know all of the reasons for God's tests, but I do know that we can survive them. We're about to go into the land, and you know what? When we get into that land, we may also have droughts. And when we have droughts, let me teach you what we do. And you can teach them Maseches Tainis. I don't know. You could teach them what do you do when you don't have rain? You pray. You talk. Right?
It seems like a pretty classic theme of Moshe that instead of confronting the problems of the people, he just runs away to ask out what to do.
That's good.
It has happened.
You see a lot of Korach also. He doesn't really confront it with his own confidence.
That's because of his anivus. That's what the Nanav does.
That's a fine thing to do.
But Moshe is not afraid of initiative. Moshe is not afraid of initiative. He is very discerning over when I should hit the Egyptian and when I should look around and say, hey, how come no one's doing anything here? Come on, guys. Or when he's going to actually do it himself. Or when he's going to take the luchos and smash them. Or he's going to say, God, what should I do now? Moshe acts on impulse sometimes and then goes on the spot.
Does that, it's bad. It seems like when he asks God,
if it's with anger. All right. I'm gonna stop right now. But here's what I want you to do is read the next few psukim, right? And read Shaddai on page 472, 473. Get started. All right. The first opinion is going to be very instructive. What do I do here? So and then we'll go. Come to class on Thursday with ready to go right into Shaddai.